Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Our guest today on Crossover is Sir Neville Marriner, esteemed conductor of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, and probably the most influential force in the establishment of the chamber orchestra as a recognized entity in performance of preclassical and classical repertoire. The original group was only 18 players, but his insistence on scholarly interpretation, tone, and intonation put them on the map and heralded a new era. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Sir Neville. May I say hello to you? It's such a joy to speak with you, and I'm so delighted to that you're still available.
Oh, I'm still awake to me.
Still available, still awake, and still doing what you've been doing so wonderfully for so many years. We have a DJ here who says when he plays the works that you are conducting, here's Sir Neville and his mariners, and of course I always visualize these poor musicians rowing a boat somewhere, but...
I see. Yes, they've been given a hard time one way or another. There's one Canadian chap who always used to say, you should get him in out of those fields, you know.
Yes, out there in the fields of St. Martin, right.
Yes.
But I must say, as an American, that the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields was actually hard to kind of visualize. Of course, when I went to London, there it was, you know, in the midst of everything. But now, you have not been conducting the orchestra for how long now?
About 5 years, really. I decided that I was not going to be immortal, and that perhaps the fact that our two names came together so frequently would mean that if I expired, then there'd be a lapse in their future, I suppose. And so we turned them loose, and I work with them when I need to, because it's no discomfort for me to work with old friends.
Yes, well, of course, Mari Pariah was supposed to, I believe, play and conduct here in Philadelphia. I think he had a problem with his finger. Something happened with that.
Yes, it's been fairly consistent over the last few years, and you just hope for a good patch to turn up. But this one suddenly turned sour on him very, very suddenly, I think.
Well, and for you to cover, as we say, or substitute, was no problem at all, I'm sure.
Well, it was a bit of a problem because I was supposed to be somewhere else for a couple of weeks.
Well, I have to tell you that we have two discs here that are the most, I would say without a doubt, the most popular at the station. One of them is your recording of Wellington's Victory.
On the really? Films.
Absolutely. It is out of print. And every time that we play it, we get a slew of calls because, of course, there are all these sound effects, which are so marvelous. Whose idea was that?
Well, it was the idea of the engineer at Philips at the time. He was, I think, looking for another career for himself. But he introduced these things, and it seems... I mean, the music itself is so fragile that it needs something to give it some character, and he did it.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that. You're not in awe of Beethoven, I guess, in that particular work.
Well, I don't think Beethoven would sort of present it as one of his major achievements.
But this is so, it's so picturesque. I mean, this is exactly... What film does?
Well, exactly, and it's probably what Beethoven had in mind. It just wasn't available to him at the time.
Well, he was also commercially minded, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Oh, well, most composers had to be, I think. The patronage was not so generous.
Now, the other one that is tremendously popular, which we have gotten some strange calls about, are the Academy Plays Opera, the wonderful arrangements by Christopher Palmer and Andrew Price Jackman of the arias.
Oh, yes.
The opera arias.
Yes, and I never really pursued that because I was not really convinced that we were doing the right thing at that time. It was about 20 years ago, I suppose, when we did that, and the crossover repertoire didn't seem to have much of a future, not for me anyway.
Well, of course, I think for opera buffs, they're not used to hearing them that way.
No.
You know, and so I would get a few calls saying, well, what is that? That's not really the way it's supposed to be done. But it is rather, it's very popular, I have to tell you.
Well,
still.
Certainly the record companies thought that it may take off, but eventually I think I agree with some of the people who had called in and complained.
Right. Well, I do remember, I have to tell you, if I'm going to give away my age, that you had done the Ancient Airs and Dances that was so very tremendously successful as a disc.
That must have been in the 70s.
That's right.
We made that with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra.
Mm-hmm. And it was terribly popular. Did you win something? Well, did they have Grammys then? I guess I don't know. I suppose they did.
I can't remember. Occasionally we get these bouquets thrust at us, but I don't know if that achieved one. But it was some of the happiest times we had with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra then. They were really fizzing with life, and that was one of their better efforts, I thought.
Can you tell our audience just a little bit about how everything started for you? You were originally a violinist, was second violin in the London Symphony, is that right?
Yes, I started life as a violin student at the Royal College of Music, and then after the war I went to Paris and studied it with Benedetti there, and I always thought perhaps I might be something like Yasha Heifetz, but I discovered that the position was already filled. And that I had to settle for something slightly less than that. And for a time I was in the string quartet for about 7 years. I think when I got married, I decided I had to have a sort of rather more settled income and joined the London Symphony Orchestra. And after a couple of years there, one or two of us felt that this perhaps wasn't going to be our life's work. And we started playing in small ensemble just for fun, about 12, 13 of us. And the keyboard player of the ensemble, his job was looking after the music at St. Martin in the Fields.
Oh.
And after a couple of years, he said, why don't we give a concert? And that's how it all started.
I think that people today don't realize the life of an orchestral player up until not too long ago was really, I mean, many years ago, they were very short seasons. I know in the United States there were 6 month seasons and the pay was very, very low. Now, of course, a position in an orchestra is quite desirable, I think, for...
Yes, it is.
But
it
wasn't. It wasn't for many, many, many years. So you and some freelancers, is that right, got together and
Absolutely.
Did this Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, and you named it, of course, after the
vicar insisted. He's given us the use of the church for some time and allowed these concerts to happen. But he said, you've got to mention the church's name.
Well, that never stopped.
We said, what a ridiculous idea. I mean, you can't get a name as long as that on the posters.
Unbelievable.
But he said, well, it's that or nothing.
So you had no choice. Now, when did the conducting actually start?
Really, when I went to Los Angeles, there the repertoire tended to be somewhat bigger. That was in 1969, and you couldn't really direct it from the concertmaster's seat any longer. You could stand up and wave your bow. In fact, it was Pierre Monteux, the music director of the London Symphony Orchestra, who came to one of our concerts and said, Neville, why don't you stand up and conduct like a man and come to my conducting school? And so I went to study with him at his school in America.
It was in Hancock, Maine,
That's
I
right.
read.
It was a great time. I mean, it was exceptional.
Well, now... you, though, were also around at the time when you had this kind of early music renaissance, isn't that right?
Well, yes. One of my greatest friends at that time had been a man called Thurston Dart. And he was perhaps the most prominent of the English musicologists of that time. And he and I used to play together in a small ensemble and as a duo. And stylistically, he was very keen that we should start an early music group of some sort. It didn't exactly suit my taste entirely because the sort of musicians that it attracted at that time were not particularly good instrumentalists.
And there was a style of playing that was quite different.
Yes, it was. And of course, it's become a separate industry nowadays.
Yes,
the early music people are almost divorced from the mainstream of classical music playing. They are a separate entity. But what we tried to do with the Academy was to absorb some of the stylistic elements and the conventions of the period without distorting the music too much.
Well, I mean, you've done so many, many recordings. I mean, how does one explain that? You're very, very popular. I mean, the ensemble is so very recorded.
Well, I think we were just lucky that our ensemble was launched at a time when there weren't very many of us. And also when the record industry was just beginning to look for the sort of repertoire that we were capable of playing. Before that time, 19th century music had been perhaps the most dominant repertoire. But once they got the 18th century going, then we were there and available, and we used to make two or three records a week.
Yes, it's really quite incredible. How big is the ensemble now?
It's how long is a piece of string, really? it can be as small as about 20, I suppose, when it is directed by the concertmaster. We recorded all the Brahms symphonies a couple of years ago, so that we needed full symphonic size.
Yes, but that's what I think one sees the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, and one doesn't think really of a chamber ensemble too much. I mean, it's all encompassing now.
I think that perhaps considering the music market nowadays, I think since I don't work with them quite so much, they prefer to work as a chamber music group and not a conducted group. Therefore, they will stay in their small format as long as possible.
What is your opinion of the music business now?
I think it's fragile. I think that quite a lot of the time it lacks imagination and it does need new ideas. But I think the public nowadays focuses very much on personalities, and soloists of great distinction, I think, always attract an audience. And I went to a concert the other day in Los Angeles with Dudamel conducting.
Oh, well, he's very exciting, I think.
And, he is quite an item. Mm. It is quite exceptional to see the orchestra respond so freely.
Well, he's very emotional and very passionate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of thing is going to still attract a public to performances.
And yet, I must say that years ago, you could recognize the sound of the larger orchestras. Now it's very generic, I think.
I'm afraid it is, yes. Really, because musicians have moved around much more freely, of course. There are so many Eastern European musicians in London and in America. Now that they brought with them their own characteristics and orchestras, thanks maybe partly to record companies, orchestras have become indistinguishable, really, because technically they're all pretty good.
Well, of course, years ago, again, I keep referring to years ago, I guess the conductor's personality permeated the interpretation in many cases.
Of course, yes. But in those days, of course, he used to spend entire seasons with the orchestra so that his style became the orchestra style. But nowadays, music directors maybe spend 10 weeks of the year with an orchestra, which is hardly enough to give them any unique style. And I think you just exploit nowadays a lot of very good musicians and get the best performance out of them you can.
And, of course, the recording industry, we don't know where that's going either.
Well, no. I think it's all sort of gone up in smoke somewhere. It's I think if I make two or three records a year nowadays, that's considered to be quite exceptional.
Now, your son, he is a clarinetist. Does he first chair it with the...
Yes, he's a solo clarinet with the London Symphony Orchestra.
And have you recorded with him, or will you be recording the Mozart?
Yes, we have recorded together. We've done a couple of records. I had to do the Mozart, of course. But I think we've done some English contemporary music, too. And it's a strange experience.
It must be very thrilling.
Someone that you used to kick around the house, and then suddenly you have to respect him as an artist.
Well, if you're still a conductor, you can do a little bit of that.
Yes, I can still be quite heavy.
Where do you call home, Sir Neville? Are you in the UK, or do you...
The family house is still in London. But my wife thinks we live in the country. We have a house in the country which has got the sheep and the cows to go with it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And that's where she feels home is. But, of course, we have to spend quite a lot of time in London because of the work.
Do you do a lot of conducting now?
I'm afraid so. I think with geriatric conductors, they become more desirable as they get older because the orchestras have sort of got used to them. But you could fill every week of the year if you wished.
I do remember seeing Toscanini conduct at Carnegie Hall. He was very old, and the podium had a rail around it. And let's hope you won't need that.
Well, not yet. But I remember working with Toscanini.
Yes, how was that?
And it was quite alarming.
Oh, that's a good word, alarming. Was he demanding?
Well, he commanded such extraordinary respect, of course, before he raised his baton at all. The orchestra was completely under his command. And I think we played and recorded all the Brahms symphonies with him.
What you're saying is this is the respect that he commanded, or was it fear, or was it a combination?
Well, it was respect, but not fear, really, for an English orchestra. I think if you were under his command in America when he could hire and fire, then perhaps there was a certain amount of a fear attached to it. By the time he got to England, he couldn't hire and fire, but he still had to be respected for his musical ability.
Apropos of what we were saying about the presence now of a conductor on the podium with the orchestra, it is different. I mean, people still respect fine conductors.
No, I think those things change. When you said earlier that orchestras used to have short seasons, as soon as an orchestra got a 52-week contract, it was in almost a more powerful position than the conductor because their contracts are pretty inviolable, whereas a conductor can be invited or not invited, and the orchestra has a great deal of influence on that.
And, of course, many conductors have several posts. I know that they fly around the world, I guess.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. You can play 10 weeks here and 10 weeks there.
Now, are you what are you going to be doing in Philadelphia?
These were programs that were devised, I think, for Murray.
Yes.
In the first place. But in his place, we have this remarkable young Chinese girl who is, I think, is a resident of Philadelphia.
Is that Yuja?
Yes.
Yes, she's brilliant.
And she is quite extraordinary. The Academy has taken to her very quickly on this. This is the first time we've worked with her. And I think by the time we'd done our second performance with her, she was part of the group. I mean, musically, technically, everything, personality is ideal.
That's fabulous. So you'll be doing the which piano concerto?
I think she's playing Mozart. I would try to persuade her to play Mendelssohn as well, because there's a rather silly little piece in the program which I wouldn't have put in, a Mendelssohn string symphony.
Yes.
And I think it's much more interesting if we play the Mendelssohn piano concerto instead.
Whether we'll get away
with that, I don't know what the concert promoters may think about it.
Well, you have to use all your charms, I guess.
Well, somebody will have to do some work here.
Oh, it's a pleasure speaking with you, Maestro. I hope to meet you and perhaps come to the concert. But in any case, thank you so much for giving us your time here.
It's been a pleasure.
On WRTI. Thank you. The best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.